The Diocesan Search Committee of the Diocese of New York and New Jersey presented questions to the nominees they will present at the upcoming Extraordinary Diocesan Assembly for the High Office of Diocesan Bishop. The questions, offered in interview format, were formulated to allow the nominees an opportunity to address, in their own voices, the areas of concern most widely shared throughout the diocese, as delegates and faithful of the parishes seek to prayerfully discern how they shall approach the assembly and the upcoming election. There are two parts to each interview. Each part is comprised of two questions and the responses from the nominee. The following is part two of the interview with Archpriest David Mahaffey. Father David, what are the fundamental attributes you would most highly value in a diocesan hierarch of our church today?
I suppose the attributes that I most highly value in a bishop are, first of all, those in the bishop who brought me and nurtured me through my formative years in the church. For 12 years, I was the deacon in Western Pennsylvania under the leadership of the ever-blessed Archbishop Cadill. And I saw the way that he worked with people. I admired many of his positive and good traits. And like all humans, he had his weaknesses as well, as do I. So what I think I look for is someone who has the ability to hear what people say. I'm not talking about whether his hearing is perfect or not, or whether he needs hearing aids, but rather, does he listen when people talk? Does he respond to their questions? In almost any time you see a politician being forced to answer a question he doesn't like, he really doesn't answer the question. He talks about everything but. I think the same thing can happen to us if we allow it to happen. So being able to listen to people and respond to their questions directly is very important. As I said before, we still seem to have a problem of trust with our leadership in the episcopacy. And again, this is just one way that would be overcome. Secondly, one time I heard Bishop Basil Essie give a talk, and Bishop Basil is a wonderful man, an excellent bishop. And he said that when he was a parish priest, he considered the families in the parish to be his family. We had to look after who he had to care for. But when he became a bishop, he realized that his family really was his priest, and it was his duty to look after them as well as the rest of the flock. And maybe I don't have his idea exactly right, but as I understand it, that is one of the roles of the bishop. I think the fact that, you know, I've been married, I had wonderful, loving, memorable years with my wife. I still have my four wonderful, loving children that I get to see once in a while and spend time with. They're all adults. They're all grown. But it makes me sensitive to certain things. And unfortunately, I have to say that I've seen times when a bishop didn't understand when he had a priest family in crisis because he hadn't been married. He didn't know. And I think that's something that, you know, once in a while, not always, but once in a while, it's probably good to have a bishop who's married, just for that reason. They pick up on those things, make it more valuable to be a leader in the church. I think another important issue that I look for in a bishop is his ability to travel. Now, when I say travel, I don't ask him what kind of car he drives or if he's does he like to fly or not. But I mean, is he looking forward to visitations with his parish? Does he want to see his flock? Does he want to see his churches? Does he want to spend time with them? Or is business important and necessary to get back to headquarters, so to speak? I would get up very early in the morning sometimes, drive to Pittsburgh from my home in Clearfield County, and pick up Archbishop Cadill and spend the day with him. I'd take him home and then go back to my home at night. I appreciate what's involved in doing that and what you're asking someone to do. And so I think that's important, that they have that desire, that love of traveling, of being with their people. I'd also like to mention something that when anybody asks me what I think about the episcopacy or how I view the episcopacy, I ask this question. When was the last time that you observed the washing of the feet? I know it's a rare service. It's only done once a year, and it's usually only done in a cathedral by a bishop and the priest of the diocese. But it reminds me of that gospel and command of Christ that whoever wants to be the leader of all must be the servant of all. And I think that expresses it as an activity better than words could do. Servanthood and the virtues that go with it are necessary in a good episcopal candidate. And it is something that all of us should try to, best of our ability, observe in ourselves. How willing are we to be a servant to our fellow man? Isn't that really what our faith is about? Is that not what we read on the Sunday of the Last Judgment? How, if you took and paid attention to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Well, maybe the bishop needs to do that in a magnified way. The other thing, of course, is a continuation of work on restoration and trust. Now, I have been a priest long enough to know that you never please everybody in a parish. And I'm sure there's people out there that you could probably talk to. Maybe they didn't care for the way I did something, and that's fine. But if one thing stands out in a position of leadership, I think that's the necessary thing. Do you really trust him? When I first went to my first parish assignment as a priest, it's one of the first things I said to them. I will stay here and I will be your priest as long as you and I trust each other. And if we ever lose that trust, then maybe we need to consider our relationship. And that's perhaps what we need to do as Orthodox Christians as well. Faith and trust, the right things, the right way, at the right time. That's something all of us can work towards, I think. And especially in our bishops.
Father David, what are your thoughts about the Diocese of New York and New Jersey? Its challenges, opportunities, direction?
Well, the Diocese of New York and New Jersey is a rather large diocese. And it's unique, I think, because it actually has a structure of three different types of parish environments. At one level, you have the City of New York. Now, the City of New York is unique in itself. I've lived near Philadelphia for a couple years now. And I've been to New York City on many occasions. But the two cities are actually very different from each other, I think. And there's a diversity that comes out in New York City that I don't think you find anywhere else. It is truly the cosmopolitan center of our universe, so to speak. So I think it brings with it unique challenges, unique opportunities, and unique situations that all need to be dealt with. You have traditional people of faith who have been Orthodox since their infant baptism. You have a large area of people who maybe know about Orthodoxy in the city, but haven't really thought much about it or been involved in it. And then you have immigrants who are constantly, still to this day, arriving in New York City and need tended to. All these need special consideration and the right people doing the right jobs in the right way at the right time. Now, this doesn't happen overnight, and I hope that no one expects that whoever you choose for a bishop, and I want to say again, I think that you have three very good candidates. Any one of them would do you well. The other two would anyway. But you have to have time to develop the programs that are necessary. I know that some people will take what I'm saying here today and maybe even try to make the words different than I intended. And since this format is only unidirectional, I can't hear you or I can't respond to your questions the way that perhaps I'd like to. But let me just say that when you look at the diocese and you see the vast diversity of parishes, when you see the various styles and traditions that have become the parishes of New York and New Jersey, I think they all tend to bring their own, if you will, value to the tradition of Orthodoxy in their own way. And we need to be sure that as we try to grow the church and evangelize others, that we take all those aspects into consideration. Aside from the uniqueness of New York City, of course, there's also the Diocese of New Jersey, where there's a lot of concentration of parishes within a certain area, and then a few more parishes spread out over a wider area. And those are the types of situations that we also need to consider in planning a future. Maybe the answer is to have more deaneries or some other structure. I don't know. Not there. But an idea. Also, there's the New York State Deanery. I remember as a young married man, we made many, many trips to upstate New York to, what I call upstate New York, to Niagara Falls, where my late wife had family, still has family to this day. And I remember that wonderful, beautiful little church in Niagara Falls that has since become a monastery. Buffalo, the city that it once was, well, it's different now. I know that. Many things are different than they once were, and that's what we need to realize. But as Winston Churchill once said, a pessimist looks for difficulties in every opportunity, but an optimist finds opportunity in every difficulty. So perhaps that's what we need to do. Look at our difficulties and turn them into opportunities. And make the diocese the great jewel in the crown that it once was. No one knows what the future holds yet. That's between you and the Holy Spirit. You pray for the right things to happen. You pray for God's will to be done. And I'm sure that's what will happen. You pray for anything else, I'm not sure God will hear you. So do what you think is right with the guidance of God and the Holy Spirit, and I'm sure He will direct you in all things. God bless you and keep you, and thank you again for this opportunity.
This concludes part 2 of the interview with Archpriest David Mahaffey.